welcome to Mike's Cast. It hosts Greg, Mike, and...
You're damn right.
Right.
I already got hearing problems. Damn, that was loud.
Really? You're still having trouble with that? All right, well, maybe turn your headphones down a bit.
And then now it's back to being okay. I may have to adjust that. Richard's got smoke coming out of his ears. It's so loud.
So before we talk about, I got a couple emails after the fact. Let's see. All right. So this is from a dude. His name's Olivier Harcourt.
Okay.
And when I hear Harcourt, I think Star Trek, of course. Right, Greg?
Yeah.
Harcourt.
Yeah, I got you.
Harcourt, Fenton Mudd.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So he emails us and says, first episode of Mike's Cast he listened to was number 241, Ticket Time Machine. He was struck by how much information was lying under the surface of his limited Disney theme park knowledge. He felt like I had struck gold, like I had found a hidden source of insider knowledge. Little does he know.
I was going to say he has.
As a South African, my access to Disney parks is limited to a handful of trips to France to visit family. When the podcast went on hiatus, I felt a real gap in my podcast library. I'm very happy that you're all back and the frequency of new episodes is a treat. So thank you to all of you. My main suggestion for show 300, which he missed, sorry about that, but it seems to him that the Disney company is consciously taking advantage of the past decade's social media-fueled resurgence of interest in the theme parks. With inventions such as lightning lanes, they seem to be pushing the envelope on how much they can squeeze more money out of guests while the experience becomes poorer, again, in his opinion. It seems to him that while there may be some moaning about the changes, paragraph jumped here. There isn't a concrete pushback from guests. I thought it'd be interesting for each of you to predict what move, if any, Disney could make that would send attendance plummeting. As a bonus, you could each suggest the heinous Disney act that would keep you away from the parks. All right, so we'll add this to the list. All right. Adjacent show idea, which may be more suited to a separate episode, is what he noticed during his last trip to Disneyland Paris. There's a definite dumbing down in the storytelling. A sort of exposition. Phantom Manor used to be one big mystery, which added a tremendous amount to this unique Haunted Mansion type ride. A bad CG series of videos has replaced the giant squid attack and the Nautilus walkthrough, effectively killing the intense atmosphere and turning a stunning set into a museum display. Hyperspace Mountain and Marvel Flight Force Assemble tell you what you are seeing on giant screens, perhaps an accessibility thing for people with sight issues, but oh my goodness, I'd almost prefer a coaster with no theming. And then he says he'll stop now. If you feel like doing a silly and pointless whip around, how about guessing how many times I've been to Euro Disney or Disneyland Paris? Taking into consideration the travel to France 5 times since the park opened, that we have lived in France since the end of 2019, and that I've had an annual point, I'm going to assume pass, for a period of 1 year at some point. It's a stupid idea. I just want to show my appreciation for the whip around in case you guys want to do it. Here's the answer. It's a maths problem. It's got parentheses and all right, so order of operations. Anyway, one last question. Are you guys still in contact with Jeff from Meandering Mouse? I seem to recall him being mentioned in a recent episode, though I wasn't sure I'd heard correctly. Meandering Mouse was another of my favorite podcasts, and it just stopped seemingly overnight. I'd love to know what happened to him and how he's doing. My apologies for the long email. I sometimes get swept up in it, especially since I don't really have anyone I can speak in-depth Disney with. I think it also speaks to the quality of the banter of your podcast. Thank you once again to all of you. I look forward to show 300 and many afterwards. So, Olivier, thank you for the email.
Yes, thank you. Very nice.
I'm sorry that you missed the 300 episode cutoff. And actually, by the time you hear this, we're going to be like 4 or 5 episodes past it. But we still appreciate the...
I was trying to hear his voice with the accent from...
South Africa?
Yeah,
But he's... French, it sounds like.
The buddy movie, or the cop buddy movie, Danny Glover and...
Mel Gibson.
Oh, Gibson. Lethal Weapon?
Yeah. Lethal Weapon, thank you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Diplomatic Immunity.
Diplomatic Immunity.
No, yes. All that is like, you know, my buddy wants to immigrate.
but you're Blick.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this with
Well, you are, you know.
I'm just going to be a giant guess.
But... No. I have the math. I have the answer. I need to do the math. I'm not doing that. We'll do that.
Okay.
We can do that later. But we're here to finally get the discussion about Disneyland Handcrafted done. Apparently during our pre-episode, I don't want to say research, but preparation, turns out that was the holdup. For the longest time, I thought Richard was the holdup. So I finally watched it probably like 3 months ago, and now we're just getting around to talking about it.
Richard's only problem with it, he thought he was watching a documentary about one guy.
Let's be plain. Let's be plain and simple and truthful. I know that's a hard one in this day and age, but I was reading an article in the newspaper, and they were talking about it, and they made it sound like it was a lot of it was about Joe Fowler. So I was going off the newspaper article because, lo and behold, the movie hadn't come out yet, but I watched it within a week of it coming out because I was really interested to see what it looked like after, you know, after reading the article. Greg had seen it first because he made fun of what I was talking about. And then when I saw it, I did see what he was saying, that Joe Fowler was about five sentences in it while they were talking about all these other things going on.
I'm pretty sure the person that wrote that article hadn't seen it yet either, but had been told some information and they caught on to the name of Joe from the parks and his history and just made some giant assumptions. It's my guess.
So,
well, having watched it, I thought it was a well done production. And speaking as someone that, you know, I don't want to say his hobby, you know, as someone who's dedicated a lot of time to talking about Disneyland, there was information in there that I had not seen.
What?
Yeah, there were some that last one, Mike, it would have been apropos to have that in one of our previous shows.
Yeah.
Yes, there was film, unique film, and I mean, dig deep in the archives or someone's personal collection of stuff we probably haven't seen.
That was the thing that impressed me the most, because when we were getting ready for the 50th anniversary, WDI went out and talked to everybody. They were getting all the home movies. They were getting everybody's pictures. They were getting all the film that they can get, redigitizing it, cleaning it up. And they had it on, I want to say, like 45 or 50 digibeta tapes. Well, I was still working over at Cast TV at that time, and I was charged with taking all the tapes that we borrowed, all the tapes from WDI, and I duped them all so that we had our collection of all those tapes of everybody's home movies of the building of Disneyland and the opening and the first few years of Disneyland. And there was a lot of stuff, you know, when I was first reading on this movie and seeing it, I thought, okay, this is a lot of the stuff that I had seen in these WDI tapes. There was a lot more in there that I had never seen before. So I found that most impressive.
One of the interesting things I found was
21.
They had the wherewithal, they had the thought to build a tower in the center of the property and stick cameras on it and record all the construction activity in all cardinal directions.
Yeah, that's not unprecedented, but I'm so glad they did it.
So you think that concept of we have a giant massive construction project, we should put a tower in the middle of it and have cameras pointed forward?
I bet you do some research, you'll find a lot of documentation on similar stuff maybe not exactly the same, but you're also talking about a group of filmmakers who,
yeah, well, sure,
their whole life is to get big Woody over how they can use a camera differently. I mean, you've seen the picture of the guys working on the Empire State Building. There's a companion picture of women also doing a similar thing.
What?
And then if you
sitting out on the beam eating their lunch,
yeah, And then if you'd look at the camera that was used to take it, you'd be like, you get some props to that cameraman to be equally up there. No, yeah, no, big, no support, big old view camera. OSHA. That's the thing I noticed about this. Watching the guy like tip over the grader and then jump around off swing arms on cranes. Yeah.
He was grading at too much of an angle. The grader starts tipping over. He just jumps right off of it. Oh, no big deal.
But a lot of that stuff, I'm thinking, God, that was an OSHA's nightmare. But you also kind of looked at it. That was like, you know, manly men building things, and
it was a little bit of cowboy out there.
It was very cowboy. Well, that's what, you know, even in the time I worked there, we'd see, like, when the Emporium was redone, wasn't unusual for them to hit a water line or a gas line they didn't know was there because it wasn't documented. They made changes on the fly. Things were just done. You know, we got to get it open. We're just moving along. It was quite interesting. But seeing the footage of stuff that you've never seen before, that was probably the coolest thing to me, and trying to orientate us in today's world of what it looks like today compared to what it was then. You know, train tracks are in different locations. Train stations are in different locations.
Zero mature trees.
Oh, yeah, zero. Well, one mature tree probably in the whole place.
Well, Jungle Cruise had mature trees around it, but all around the river, it was all like, looked like they didn't finish. They didn't look like they had done. It's like, all right, we're putting the Mark Twain in there.
You know, we've all heard the famous story of putting signs for the weeds and calling them fancy names, so it sounded like they were some, some important plant, and it was just the weed, which I still find funny to this day. But yeah, I mean, it was well done, well researched, and I wish they would do something like that on the Magic Kingdom or Epcot. See that. I'd really like to see, because I still have some questions, you know, now that I've been in architecture and construction for so many years. And I think that's one thing that made this interesting to me, is seeing how they did things back then. Not a whole lot different, except a little, like Richard was saying, kind of cowboyish. But in Florida, we know, you know, the utilidors on the first floor, basically, maybe a half floor up, whatever. But what you usually don't see is that transition to them building the utilidor and then how they started the next level, you know, because there's dirt up there. Are some of those buildings attached directly to the utilidor? Is there another layer in there somewhere? I'd really like to see the construction details of how, like, Main Street, you know, if the asphalt down Main Street, which is now cobblestone in a lot of areas, that laid directly on top of the utilidor, or is there another, you know, layer of compacted dirt over it? You know, I'd really like to see some of that.
Well, I would think it'd be, personally, I think there's probably dirt.
There probably is.
I think there probably is. It's a physical part of the rooftop of the utilidor that's all part of, and the dirt's just in their planters.
I mean, it could be, but you got to get the buildings up above the what they're pouring for the walkways. So there's a little bit, you know, there's a step up. It'd be interesting.
See what it all looks like.
There's a guy that's been showing up in my feed, and I'm like, if this stuff is not satirical, I don't know how these guys are hired, how they work in the trade industry. I mean, one, they're out on the site in flip flops and no shirts.
No,
and
that's
stuff
dumb.
Like that. But the way they over nail and bend things against their will into spot. I mean, there are tricks and stuff to do when, you know, piece of wood's a little twisted or curved. You know, you got to get it back in place. But these guys, I mean, the comment sections and some of them are just like amazingly interesting. And this one that he built some stairs to a deck, this is a different one, who's basically putting all the load on some Sensum straps that he's been building, you know, 100 of these like this. I'm like, they're just waiting to fail. And everybody's commenting. You can't put that kind of stress and weight just on these Synsom straps. There should have been a beam under the last, or right up against the last tread fork to bear against, and then you strap it to keep it. Anyways, it just,
okay.
You know, you see this stuff and your mind goes. So I like to see construction details. It's interesting to me. So, I'd love to go through the plans and details.
Well, you know, it's Leslie Iwerks, right? She did something also. What was the other thing she did? She did something for Disney Plus.
Didn't she do the one that was on her, was it grandfather of Iwerks?
I'm looking up her filmography. The Imagineering Story.
Yeah, my daughter was really, I have a hard time watching those because, and Richard, I don't know if you've watched him or if you do have the same feeling that they start to like almost become a victim of their own success in the sense that they start buying into some of the stories that we can't see we can't see the real thing anymore. We've got to see the Disney version and glossed over version of how some of the stuff was really done.
Which the three of us coming from quote unquote the older days where we actually got to meet some of these people, going through and meeting the real people were actually a lot more interesting than the glossy version at times.
Oh yeah. I can't tell you how happy I am to have set almost a full day with Rolly Crump, have a meal, break bread with him in his backyard and pee in his toilet, and,
Okay, nice. So yeah, she did.
That's a little too familiar in TMI.
Yeah, his house was like everywhere was covered with just cool art, not unsimilar to the restaurant right by me that I've taken you to, which he did the artwork for that restaurant all over his house. And then his stories were so interesting. Some of them that the camera was off; it wasn't necessarily for public consumption. Funny guy, very personable. Glad I got that. And then we met Hinch that one time, got to go in his office, get some Mickey cards signed, nice guy, not as much time with him, but still enough to say, been there, done that. Right. But knowing an Imagineer that I worked with and knowing how unorganized Imagineering was even in the 80s, when I see these glossed over versions, it's just, to me, it's not as real because I know the real story. What I would like to do is, rather than now trying to create bullshit that they're creating, is go through the archives of what never got built. Like, what ideas we've heard of a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But what about the ones we never heard of that didn't get the light of day,
drawings and whatnot.
But those are the ones I'd like to see. I really think they should dig through that before they start shoving more IP in where it doesn't belong.
Well, I was going to comment that, we know, she's the granddaughter of Ub, right? But
also the daughter of
Dawn,
another Imagineer.
Dawn Iwerks. But so she did an ILM, a movie about a TV movie about ILM. She did the Imagineering Story. She's done a bunch of other stuff, and then Disneyland Handcrafted. So I think I'd like to see her do another Disney one about the construction of Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, then Epcot. It would be good, but I wonder if it would really carry the same weight as Disneyland. Because even by 71, you might say some way of doing things, the excitement of building the first one, some of that is wore off by the time they get to 71.
Well, yeah, okay. But see, here's the thing. Is it Disneyland Handcrafted means it's commenting on the fact that it was, not cookie cutter. It was all handmade, right? It was all, we're going to take a drawing and, the boss likes it. We're going to do our best to make it look, or make it come to pass.
Well, even if it was bought, like I believe the Dumbo ride made the mechanisms might have been bought. They're customized.
The carousel, right? Yeah. It was also, yeah. But you the know, carousel. But you know, Mark Twain built from scratch, oh, yeah. Right?
Literally watching those guys put that thing together, or finishing it because the keel wasn't laid there.
All the rail cars, right? All the rail cars are built from scratch.
No, I believe the early ones were purchased.
Well, the two sideways ones are
the two steam engines were built on property, and the old and see seeing stuff like that, seeing the original roundhouse, which when I discovered the roundhouse, I was working graveyard. It was out by Winston Gate. You can still see that basically is still Winston Gate, right, Richard? When you're on the tram and you come around the corner.
Oh, there is a gate there. It's called Winston, but. It has nothing of what the.
It's
what
a people gate, right?
I know there's nothing behind it, but is it in the same location?
Roughly, yeah, pretty much roughly in the same spot.
Close enough then. I'm out there in graveyard. It's dark. I think it was, and Richard can chime in if it pops into his head first. The shop that was using it was the shop that basically worked with like pneumatics and water tanks. And those kind of mechanisms.
I can't remember. Cycle shop there.
Cycle shop. That was it. So if it cycled, they probably dealt with it. And I'm looking at this building. The same thing happened to me when we were at Imagineering. I'm looking at this building. I'm looking at the shape of the building. And I turned to, I don't know if it was Jeff Curdy on that tour. And I said, this is where they assembled the monorail, isn't it? he goes, how'd you know that? I'm looking at the proportions of the building. You know, what else would they have built in here? And we were, you know, the room that we saw on The Wonderful World of Disney where Walt's standing and there's a ladder and he's got the giant
Epcot picture.
Yeah. And we're in a conference room and I did the same thing. It's like, this is the room. X room. And
this
he's
is
like,
Project X room. Yeah.
He goes, yes. How'd you know that? I'm like, again,
send
little
pictures,
observation
yeah.
that, that, seeing yeah, pictures.
I was there with you on that trip there. That was one of the WDI tours there back then.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm on graveyard and I see the shape and, you know, it's one of these typical like tin buildings, bunch of glass. And then I noticed, I looked down, I'm like, there's railroad tracks. Now they're filled. There's slurry or it's not slurry, but asphalt in between the rails. And so then I thought I'm going to follow them. I follow them. And there's a gate that's no longer there. This one I know because that berm is gone that took you right out to the railroad tracks. So it didn't take too much smarts or critical thinking to figure out that was the roundhouse. And then you see some old pictures and you're like, that's the roundhouse.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Very cool to find. Like when I found I stumped an Imagineer on this one. This one I couldn't believe. Mark Eads. I told him I'd found the original monorail roundhouse. I said that's not it. It was I don't think it was building 400, but it's gone now. It's roughly where the railroad is like
300 or 400 or I remember something like that. when you were showing me that building and the pylon still sitting there in the middle of the building
and you couldn't see, like I immediately went there and went upstairs. I was picking up something from this is where they actually made costumes, not costuming, but where they made costumes. And there's a bunch of women sewing. And I forgot what they sent me up there for. I don't know. It was one of these things. Go pick something up for us. Bring it back. And I'm standing there. I'm looking around. I look at the floor. And there's infill. Just like when I found the old people mover track in the carousel building. That's, you know, the track's gone. But there's plywood laid into where the track used to be. And I'm looking around like there's flooring. And then again, proportions. Why would you have a building this shape randomly? It just doesn't make any sense for what they're using the building now. And then it didn't take me too long to find that information. Mark didn't believe me. So I found an aerial picture with monorail tracks going right into this building. And when you can stump an old time Imagineer who was responsible for every film that was in Epcot at opening. And it worked at the studio and Disneyland and used to write, you know, for the Register and stuff about Disney. It felt good. Not that I have to win, but.
Yeah, sure. Sure. If I was sitting right next to you, I'd pat your back for you.
Thank you. I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah, don't break your arm patting yourself.
But back to the concept of the same producer taking her skills and making a project for Magic Kingdom. It doesn't have to be the same, you know. Well, we want to see footage we haven't seen, right? Because that was part of the attraction for me, was seeing stuff I hadn't seen before. And even with a documentary bent to it, like they're going, okay, we need to film everything we do here, there was still some whimsy to it.
The storytelling of it.
Like who thought to put a camera on the ground and have the earth movers drive over it? Just for fun, right? Let me ask you this, coming and going, you know?
How much of that movie, of the films used in that movie, how much do you think you'd actually seen before?
For Disneyland Handcrafted?
No, Disneyland pulls Park out of their ass, the other film. Yeah, what are we talking about? We're talking about Disneyland Handcrafted. Yeah, how much of that movie, the film used in that movie, how much of it do you think you'd actually seen before?
Not very much. I know I've seen some of the Earth Mover sequences before.
Because that's been used in the park, where it goes fast.
But very sped up. Yep. But, you know, go ahead, Richard.
75%? Maybe? Maybe more.
I would say more than that.
I think I've seen less, you know, maybe 10% of it you've seen before.
Okay, so you're going to use the opposite number. 10% you'd seen, so 90% of new. It you had not seen.
Yeah, I would agree on that one. And that's why I was saying I was really amazed with it, because I had seen so much with the 50th anniversary that WDI had sent
over. You thought you had, right?
Well, I mean, I had these 90-minute-long Digibeta tapes that I'm duping, and I had like, how many I have, like 20, 25 of them? That I'm duping up here.
But that's what I'm saying. You thought you had seen so much, but there was so much more out there.
There's one aspect, right? The tower. Four cameras that I mentioned, right? But they ran sun up to sundown every day of construction. How much film is that? It's probably 16 millimeter.
16 millimeter. Yeah. That would give you 10 minutes a reel? 10 to 20 a reel, depends on the camera probably, but not a lot.
But the point is, shitloads just from that one point, vantage point. And they had cameras everywhere.
Well, and like a lot of it, when we do our travel show and we got a camera mounted on the car, 99% of it's unusable. It doesn't tell any story.
Yeah.
And you find, and it's just, I'm sure it's the same with that. There's probably a day you're seeing just a bunch of guys scratching their asses and eating out of their buckets.
Waiting for something to show up because the other way around, scratching their bucket
and eating out of their asses. I don't know.
If I had to ask for Magic Kingdom, okay, sure, show us. We've probably seen more than we think we have, but there's ways to differentiate. You know, Walt said we have blessings of size. Sure. And his brother Roy said, well, shoot, you know, Walt's already been out here. He already, you know, had visions. Well,
the one thing that she's also very good as a filmmaker is the interviews, the stories that she got with the people that were there telling all about these different things, and then finding interviews of some of the people that are no longer with us.
That have been recorded somehow.
There's a lot of that stuff in the archives, because that was something... I mean, we remember going into like those historical perspectives that they had. Mark Davis would be speaking, and then we would have Raleigh Crump and Greg's favorite person, Bob Gurr, doing their little speaking thing.
There's a dude.
And those are all recorded. A lot of them are filmed.
Bob's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, but he is cashed in on the I knew Walt aspect of his life.
Well, and he didn't start really doing that till there was only maybe a handful of them left. Yeah, most people didn't hear much about Bob until the later years.
Yeah. You know,
the internet probably helped a lot of that also.
I would agree with that, yes.
And he's had an on and off relationship with Disney where they're mad, then they're okay, then they're mad, then they're okay. which I don't know if that helps his grift or not, but yeah, I mean, when we used to go to the archives, just look through photographs. That's when you'd see the photograph with a cigarette and without a cigarette.
Without the cigarette.
Yeah.
And the just, I mean, they had shelves full of these, you know, binders of photographs.
You know, you could still ask for permission to visit the archive if you have a legitimate research project you want to.
Yeah, I can't think of anything legit at the moment other than I want to know.
I'm curious. I'm curious.
And my own personal curiosity, how could I satisfy that?
I want to respond back to this idiot influencer online.
Yeah. I need to see some photos. There's an idiot influencer online. Yeah, which one?
Can I make a copy of this photo so I can show where she goes wrong?
I want to see some expansion pads. Do you have any photos of expansion pads?
Yeah, labeled expansion pads, please.
My daughter was in the park yesterday celebrating, a couple days early, celebrating her birthday. And she decided she needed to take a break, and she's over at Lincoln Theater where she said they have tiki room being displayed, a lot of tiki room stuff being displayed.
There is some there, yeah.
But there's stuff of pictures of Walt in there. And as she's just watching this mom with this little girl, she must be like 5 or 6. She goes, "Look at that, mommy. Look at that. See how it has 2 fingers. Look, and he has 2 fingers there." And mom's going, "Now, remember what I told you, that they photoshopped his cigarette out. That's why he has 2 fingers there." It's like, Photoshop. Alex is going, that's going to be like me. I'm going to be doing that, you know, just doing the whole Shelley Long. Now, if you stick your fork in that plug, 120 volts of electricity will go sailing through your body.
Now, how do you suppose in the old days? Think
how good those guys were airbrushing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Versus
that's.
But then they were artists. They're supposed to be that good.
We did this in college when, you know, took photography, and sometimes you couldn't get dust off your film, or, you know, something showed up. Maybe it was on the lens of your enlarger. There you are, and you're not airbrushing.
You're stuck.
You're working. You're not stuck. You're working with ink, little brushes. You're
drawing on the photo paper, or you're drawing on the negative.
Yeah.
The paper, the finished product. You're basically then touching it up. It's a very.
And you're talking about like
tough technique, you know,
brushes with 2 or 3 hairs on them.
Yeah, you gotta be really light and, but it's fun stuff. Now,
not,
you know,
not my digital
dark room and not a lot of people's skill set, but, you know, somebody at Disney did a good job taking those cigarettes out.
Yeah. Got another batch of glossies for you to spool up. take out the glass of scotch and the cigarette.
Seeing the people like crawling around and working on the Mark Twain, people riding it, you know, all the like the early preview people.
Yeah, yeah, friends and family.
People hanging out on the train engines, and it was very cool to see that behind the scenes thing, you know.
And being the first, and also being what was it, Walt's Folly. Every success was celebrated. Every time they got something to work properly, it was time for celebration.
And just so you know, you don't have to be a Disney Plus subscriber to watch this. It's on YouTube.
YouTube?
Yeah, the whole hour and 18-minute show is on YouTube. So
interesting.
Well worth watching.
I would recommend watching it. If you haven't seen it and you're even a passing Disney fan, I'd watch it. It's...
Yeah, because there are some I wouldn't suggest because it's just, you know, saccharin and sugar and
it's all. Well, this doesn't have a lot of negative to it. It was all
no. It's not that it has to be negative, but it doesn't gloss over things either, and try to put a shine on it with, you know, pixie dust farting out of everybody's, you know, behind.
Oh yeah, because they talked about the hard time raising money. They talked about mortgaging his house.
Like they say in filmmaking, even a Hallmark movie's got conflict. You know, not everything is roses. So you gotta.
Well,
but without... in this sense, it wasn't the conflict; was the struggle of making it. making the park and getting it done on time. And that is no small feat when you think of how quickly that place was built. And
1 year.
Look at how slow things are built today. But you also have to put that in perspective. You know, there's Carl's Jr. moved out of California for a lot of different reasons. But one of the reasons was they could be through the permit process and open in, let's say, 3 months. In California, and if you were too close to the coast, that's a whole nother problem. But you could be 2-3 years.
That's ridiculous, right?
You know,
yeah,
at least a year, if not more. But they've decided they will remodel existing locations, but they won't build anything new in California.
I think you know what helped Disneyland be built quick was there's not a lot of vertical, right?
Not a ton
of vertical, which, you know, requires a whole extra set of preparation, but, you know.
But I bet if you look at the Matterhorn timeline, which, you know, if I remember the story right, there's no two pieces of metal that are exactly the same on that.
Because also hand-built, right? Handmade?
Just about they had to order the steel, but it's just to make the mountain the way it is. There's just maybe the elevator is probably the only thing that's got repetitive material. The rest of it is, you know, built to make a particular shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the way it was, at least according to stories I've heard. I haven't done a lot of research, but watching the guys work on the castle, you watch it. I mean, these guys are like true artists, and the way they're building up, one side you're kind of scratching your head, and it's like, wow, that looks pretty good for what you think looks like them just slapping material and scraping it around. I mean,
and then drawing the lines in it.
Yeah, and stone and all that, but the filigree around, you know, the towers. You're like, I mean, I think I saw some forms here and there, but in general,
and
I'm like, wow, it's kind of like when I watch, you know, on Splash Mountain, the guys working on the stonework out in front. And this is something that come up when I was in school too, about the guy, my instructor, said, you know, this building at so-and-so street, everybody's like, yeah. And he's like, none of those rocks are real. And we're all like, huh? He said, yeah, none of them are real. Then we get to Disneyland, I'm watching the construction. They got these shapes and the guy, you saw this in this handcrafted movie, the guy that goes to finish it and paint it, he's got a bucket of like
sand. Yeah.
Sand
and a color,
some muck and mesh. And, you know, I'd watch the guy with this big, those big brushes you see that are short, but big, you know, and he'd like this. They back up.
Yeah.
You know, kind of look at it, maybe move some shit around.
That was for Schweitzer Falls. Yeah. So they do that for Jungle
Cruise.
Next
thing you know, it looked like a real rock.
But
it didn't start like that in the morning.
How do you learn that
by the
skill?
Afternoon.
How do you learn that? Who teaches you that?
You do. These are the kind of jobs you wonder how someone fall into that job.
They make a living, right? Support a family, buy a house, all that.
Did that come out? Well, no one says we know they're making a living and paying the mortgage. They might, like Rolly Crump said, I couldn't make a living off of being an animator at Disney. I was also making the hole covers for the road. What the
manhole covers.
He made those too. A lot of the guys had second jobs. What I wonder when I hear those stories from people like Rolly Crump, then I wonder, how did Ward Kimball afford a fucking train in his backyard? Some of these guys are making manhole covers.
He probably went to a junkyard somewhere and had the brain to rehabilitate it.
It's very possible. Very possible.
Sure, all that was self-installed.
You know, a lot of the artisans that built Disneyland were your set builders. So it was built a lot like a set would be anywhere else. And so
with the exception of it needs to be permanent somehow. It needs to last, right?
You get your permanent structure and then you have your facade with it.
Well, my point is set builders don't make stuff to last. True. Sets typically are designed to come apart within a couple weeks, right?
Yeah. And that was a comment that was made, I remember, during the 50th anniversary, was that there was a lot of the stuff that needed to be worked on were stuff that, okay, when they were building it, they didn't expect it to have to last 50 years.
Yeah.
Not only do we have to repair it, but we have to make it last longer. So,
well, now what's that say about the guys building it? Did they not believe in Walt's dream of success? Or do they think this was going to close up like some shanty amusement park?
Who knows? You know? Who knows? You know, yeah. There's probably some people that weren't pulling for the big guy. Yeah. But they were like, I'll cash your check, dude.
Yeah. A lot of the filigree, as I'll call it, like especially on Main Street, it's thin wood. It's, you know, it's cut, it's painted. That stuff deteriorated quickly. You know, there was a point where you're like, God, they need to fix some of this. But a lot of stuff, you know, back in those days, the park was closed 2 days. It was closed early.
Plenty of time for maintenance,
You'd see guys out there, you know, replacing handrails or the spindles in between. You know, a lot of work got done that
got overlooked. Tacking up a couple pieces and repaint that spot.
Yeah, changing light bulb, whatever it was. So you got the maintenance as it went along. Which, quite honestly, I'd go back to that. Close one day a week.
Well, nobody wants to have the moose out there telling people that after you spent the last week.
Park closed. Moose up front
should have told you.
And what I say is you didn't do proper research.
Not in this day and age. In this day and age. Are you kidding?
Yeah, exactly. Help. That happened to me and Mark going to Florida. We expected to have stuff to do all night. The parks, they'll close at midnight, like out here.
No.
They close like at six or seven, and we're like, what the hell are we going to do now? You know, we had no car. You couldn't rent a car under 25 in those days. It might still be true today. You're stuck on property with not a lot of nighttime stuff to do, except Top of the World at the Contemporary. So we went up there and drank a few times. He wasn't old enough.
But he looked.
He was 19 at the time, and he wasn't 19. But yeah, big full beard. He looked. No one ever questioned him on that.
He looked like biker dude.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see the different take. Now we're seasons. We've built this one before. What did we run into? Because we do know they ran into things like Bay Lake wasn't some. Seven Seas Lagoon,
yes.
Was not supposed to be there. The park was supposed to be further south. More south. Things came up about unbuildable areas, you know, blah, blah. So things changed on, not totally on the fly, but I'm sure there's a lot more surveying and work out that. I've seen people out there trying to act like they just changed it on the fly. I'm like, it's too big. It's just too much.
And the one thing that I remember that was always the big, huge thing, before they could do any of it, they had to build a whole canal system with to get the drainage so they can get the water where it's supposed to be and drain it from the land that they wanted to work on.
And 15 years farther along of OSHA requirements and other government BS.
But that's Cal OSHA. This is Florida, my friend.
There's a federal OSHA, you know.
Yes, there is a federal
there's a federal
OSHA.
Arm of that.
I don't know when that really took its teeth into the industry. I really don't know. But you do see some of the, you forget how, say, modern some of our equipment's been, because when you still see them building Florida, it looks like some of the shit they built Disneyland with, the earth movers, the
steam shovels,
the cranes,
they used to call them, right?
The
steam shovels.
Yeah. And they still look kind of old, you know. And I thought it seemed so modern in that
and
day.
Small, right? Small. The what would we call a backhoe nowadays? You know, the steam shovels. They were slow and didn't move as much.
No.
And they still got it done in a year.
Yeah. Well, not in Florida, they didn't.
No. Florida took longer.
You're talking land. Yeah. That is a fascinating film. That's what I can say. It's well worth watching.
And I would recommend watching it. And you can find it.
Guarantee
on,
you'll
on
see
YouTube.
Stuff you've never seen before. If I meet someone that says they've seen all that,
they're
I'm
liars.
Not believe them.
Or they were, you know, part of the production.
They worked on the film.
Yeah.
Or they saw a preview.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've come to a natural end. We all agree that you should watch Disneyland handcrafted in with whatever way you can.
It's especially YouTube. There's no excuse not to.
Of course, YouTube ads are a giant pain in the ass, but, you know.
Yes.
It beats a $13 a month Disney Plus subscription, right?
Doesn't
okay. All right. Well, on behalf of Greg and Richard here, I thank you for listening, and I wish you a good night.